Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Good morning, folks. Hope you're doing well this Thursday, January the 9th. Got a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about year-end numbers. They will be released for the first time on our show at noon, and we look forward to hearing where those are ending up for 2024. We'll also talk about what the act of terrorism on Bourbon Street and the response and where we stand at the present time. Look forward to hear from Rafael Goyeneche at noon. At 11:30, we'll visit with Liz Murrell, the Louisiana Attorney General. And we'll get the latest on upgrading security in the French Quarter and gain a better understanding of the scope of the investigation that will be conducted by the Attorney General. And we'll also try to find out where she hopes to go at the end of this investigation and as it relates to any implementation of observations or otherwise. In the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour, we will visit with the folks from Delgado. We have established a great relationship with Delgado Community College. We'll gain a better understanding of a lot of what they have to offer to their students. We'll talk about enrollment with the Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, Tamika Duplessis. We'll also visit with the Chancellor, who's a great lady. Larissa Littleton-Stieb has accomplished a lot out there, as well as Harold Gasport, Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs. You want to listen to this. There's so much that they have to offer. I really look forward to it. And at 10:30, the first time on this show, we have talked to port officials any number of times, but there's a new president and CEO of the port, as well as the New Orleans Public Belt Railroad. She comes to us from the Mobile port, and that's Beth Branch. So we'll visit with her at 10:30. I don't know about you. I've been watching what's going on in California, in Los Angeles. Many people say, well, hey, why do you always look there? Well, I was born there, okay? And I had family there for a number of years. My sister actually moved out there about 30-some-odd years ago. She just left that area about a year ago or so and now lives just north of Sausalito in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I've had a lot of contact and connection to L.A. I'm familiar with the areas there. I used to spend time speaking with a number of the sheriffs in that area because I always had a curiosity about my birthplace and where it stood and everything else. And as I've been looking at this, and actually I have friends that live there too as well, and checked in with some just last evening that live in Santa Monica, and they're on alert. They're sitting on the edge of their sofa waiting to hear whether or not they are part of the mandatory evacuation. So far, so good in Santa Monica. I was watching an interview this morning with the mayor of Santa Monica, And, you know, they're not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination, but they've held on for another 24 hours. Right. And so, you know, a lot of connection there, a lot of emotion wrapped around it. Probably read 30 articles last evening about what's going on and why. And there's so many things that are eerily similar to some of the lack of leadership issues that we have here in the city of New Orleans. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling to think that firefighters are showing up on scenes, risking their lives, and there's no water in the fire hydrant. I mean, that is absolutely crazy, right? One would think. This water shortage has been the result of years of mismanagement of LA's water system. They've had a federal indictment of a leader, high-profile resignations, major operational problems. They've drained reserves too quickly. They've not spent the monies appropriately. I was looking at a list of salaries paid to individuals that work within this water department. It's almost like it's common for people to be paid $350,000, $450,000, as much as $500,000. And then you look at the job descriptions and you're like, what are we doing? So many that have resigned over the years, complete and total embarrassment. This, you know, highlights the importance of electing good people that know what the hell they're doing, right? So imagine living in a neighborhood, and let's just take Pacific Palisades, all right? Pacific Palisades is about twice the size of the city of Kenner. Kenner's about 9,600 acres. Yeah, I know, I'm crazy. I went figuring all of this out last evening. The Palisades fire right now is 17,234 acres. And it is destroyed, right? Can you imagine that Palisades relies on 3 1-million-gallon tanks that hold water, and that's what supplies the hydrants. And there's been no plan to refill these tanks and no capabilities to refill these tanks during the course of this event. So the fire breaks out Tuesday during the day. By 5 p.m., the first tank was empty on the first day. The third tank was emptied by 3 a.m. Wednesday morning. So they weren't even into this event 24 hours. They were out of water. They were out of water. How did this happen? How do you allow this to occur knowing that fire and earthquakes are the two major risks that you face in this particular area? To make matters worse, 70% of the structures in Pacific Palisades last year, their fire insurance carrier canceled coverage. Canceled coverage. And it's not like they didn't really realize what was happening here. In November of 2024, what, 60 days ago, a similar fire breakout in Ventura County. Officials were humiliated, right? They had damaged pumps. They didn't work. And they had a lack of water. And they had backup systems, but guess what? They didn't work either. And they weren't able to draw water from other sources. Why? No ability to execute. We're not testing the systems. We're not managing the equipment. We're not doing what's necessary to provide people with the basic necessities. The downstream implication? Many of the structures that have burned thus far have no fire insurance. Take a good guess as to who's going to foot that bill. It's coming. Get ready. So the Palisades Fire at 17,234 acres as of this morning is twice the size of the city of Kenner. That's like two Kenners. The Eaton Fire is another city of Kenner. City of Kenner is 9,600 acres. The Sunset Fire as this morning is another 42 acres, and the Hearst Fire is another 855 acres. And who knows what today will hold as this continues. And guess what one of the certainties is as this progresses over this period of time? They don't have access to water. What is the possibility, you think, of even rebuilding these areas? Right now, the state fair plan is taxed to the max. That's like our citizens plan here in Louisiana. It's the fair plan out there in California. There are a series of articles in Politico. There was a great article that said this could be the beginning of the end for fire insurance in California. The state's insurance market has been teetering on the edge of insolvency for years, thanks to catastrophic wildfires that have driven many insurers to stop writing new policies and drop existing ones. State Farm dropped 70% of its policies in Pacific Palisades neighborhood last year, according to a state filing, more than any other zip code in the state, in a sign that it saw the neighborhood as what? Yeah, you got it, too much risk. And that forced more people onto the FAIR plan. It was originally created in the 60s to ensure riot-scarred Los Angeles neighborhoods, but has since found more demand in rural and suburban fire-prone regions. In Pacific Palisades alone, the FAIR plan insures, hold on to your hat, $6 billion worth of property. More than all but four communities in California. What does this tell you? Everybody knew the amount of risk. And we were relying on 3 1-million gallon tanks of water. Across the state, the total value of FAIR insured properties was $458 billion, triple the total insured value since 2020. In a four-year period of time, insured properties tripled in value under the FAIR plan of all the new folks that were calling upon that because they couldn't get commercial insurance for fire coverage. Thus far, AccuWeather estimated as of yesterday somewhere between $52 to $57 billion in damages. State officials are saying they're confident that they're going to be able to limit the impact, including passing, hold on to your hat, a temporary year-long moratorium on non-renewals in areas recently burned. Sound familiar? We just got rid of that, saying the burden of getting commercial carriers and everybody back by tying their hands and not being able to cancel policies was not good for the market. They're going to go right back to that in the hopes of compelling commercial insurers to take on this risk. These folks are saying that these fires are a proving ground for these rules that were finalized just weeks ago to entice property insurers back to the market and force them to write more in fire-prone areas. It's obvious that they legalize marijuana here. They need to stop smoking for a while before they start making statements like this, going back to what I say, what's not the bollards, it's the execution. Obviously, 3 1-million gallon tanks and the inability to refresh those tanks during this event ain't going to work. It's not going to happen. And how much will these policies be as they try to restore and redevelop Pacific Palisades? And one of the downstream implications of this that I don't think anybody's thinking about is the peripheral areas that were not damaged by this fire. The property values in those areas are going to go up significantly. Because of supply and demand, right? But interestingly, you may be self-insuring these properties because there'll be no fire insurance available to you. Because what they're proposing just simply is not going to work. This goes back to, isn't it eerily similar, right? Just had this conversation with Tommy Tucker in Crosstalk about you deploy assets, but you got to maintain them. It's not about a one sound bite presser to look good politically. That's BS. It's about maintaining this equipment, maintaining and making sure that your policies, your procedures, your protocols are sacrosanct and they are adhered to. And there is a organizational structure that tests these systems periodically to make sure that everybody knows what they need to do, when, why, and how. As opposed to what we're beginning to see is finger pointing as to who is responsible for this, that, or otherwise. And I'm not sure that any of us really want to hear that crap. Do you? I don't. I want it to work. Plain and simple. This is not rocket science. It's not really hard. And anyone who complains about the difficulty in deploying equipment without trying to find alternative ways to deploy to make it easier and maybe a simple purchase of equipment or otherwise that's small in stature and you're able to move this stuff a lot easier and you hadn't gone through that process, I'm going to go ahead and say it, is a complete idiot. Because you're sacrificing the safety and security of people that we're trying to lure to this city each and every day. And if that's the attitude, that's not a good one. It's not a legitimate reason to look the other way, to be less than. And maybe it is too early to get into this. I don't know. But when I look at how eerily similar these responses in these cities are, in the lack of attention to detail, to deliver the basic necessities that we're paying more and more and more for, is heartbreaking. This is Air Katrina. 20 years later, Pacific Palisades will still be Ghost Town, USA. When you think about how many people there, and I interviewed some folks last night, I was watching three or four different channels as well, uninsured for fire. They don't recover. These are multi-million dollar homes. They don't recover. And guess where the demand's going to be as to who's going to pay for this? You got it. Your tax dollars. While Karen Bass is overseas in Ghana on a presidential, forgot what they called it, visiting and seeing the president of Ghana being sworn in over there on a presidential delegation that went across to attend the inauguration of John Dramani Mahama. The Honorable Virginia Palmer, the U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Ghana, the Honorable Shalonda Young, who is the director of the United States Office of Management and Budget is going to lead the delegation. Really? Why? Why is the management and budget person going to Ghana? You know, this administration's coming to an end. Ah, she's a good lady. Let's send her to Ghana on a presidential delegation. Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles. Why? Because she was the chairman of some subcommittee in the House when she served in Congress. That's a good reason. The Honorable Francis Brown, special assistant to the president and senior director for African Affairs. Well, that makes sense, right? The ambassador and that person. But why these others? A government paid trip to Ghana. Meanwhile, she knew about all of the warnings, all of the signs, all of the challenges, all of the fears. And this was more important. To go visit His Excellency John Dramani Mahama. We'll be right back.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. Many months ago, we decided to have a Port of New Orleans segment on our show because recognizing the economic importance of the Port of New Orleans and all that they do and how important it is to us, not only economically, but so many different fronts. And we are facing the possibility and ultimately the completion of a great new terminal that needs to be done. And we met with the former CEO of the port, as well as the New Orleans Public Belt Railroad, many times. And she has moved on, and we have a new CEO. And this is the first time that she joins us on the show, Beth Branch. And Beth, welcome to the show, and welcome to the city of New Orleans.
Oh, thank you, Noel. It's really a great pleasure and honor to be here and to be leading this really incredible organization in a state and a city that is really going to get a lot of great things done over the coming months, years, and so forth. So thanks a lot. Appreciate the invitation.
So, Beth, if you would, why don't you take a few minutes and introduce yourself to our listening audience?
Sure. Glad to. So Beth Branch recently brought on to lead the Port of New Orleans and the New Orleans Public Belt. That is our what we call a short line railroad. It's not one of the large federal railroads, national railroads that go from coast to coast or lots of miles, but a shorter amount of trackage. I came directly from Mobile, Alabama, where I was the chief commercial officer there for a few years. Prior to that, was out in Oakland, California, in a very similar business development, international marketing, supply chain type of role. Prior to that, I spent about 20 years with an ocean carrier steamship line container ship into the business called AP Moller Maersk Line. And there I was in a variety of roles, but both outside of New York City in their regional headquarters and also in their corporate headquarters in Copenhagen, Denmark. So I've been around a block a couple of times, very excited to be here, especially given what the mandate is for the Port of New Orleans and the rail, the public belt right now. And that is to deliver for the state a brand new, and it's really the first greenfield development of a container terminal in decades in this country, but to deliver that for the state and to deliver that for the Port of New Orleans. So super excited about that challenge and hopefully have the right background and skill set to be able to marshal all of our resources here to make that a reality.
Where do we stand at the present time? The lit is been hailed as the biggest public economic development project in the state of Louisiana. And I know that there's a lot of data about how many jobs it's going to create. Let's talk about that at this point.
Yeah, sure. So it is really transformational. You know, I really think about these projects as legacy building, skyline changing, transformational. And this is one of those projects. First thing I should say, though, we have to look at it in two ways. The first way is, and I'm always a glass half full person, is what it's going to bring to the state, right? So it is going to bring about 18,000 new direct and indirect jobs. That is we've had some economic impact studies done on that. And that's not just folks who are working directly on the terminal, but it's the trucking companies, it's the warehouse, it's the rail, it's local providers of services that support the terminal. So somehow connected an additional 18,000 jobs there. The report that we've had, Commission has also looked at state tax revenue. That's about $1 billion. So there's a lot of things that play into this. Today, the economic impact of the Port of New Orleans on the state is we're connected somehow. One in every five jobs is connected to the Port of New Orleans. And we need to make sure that we continue to be that economic engine that is helping support businesses locating here from wherever they're locating from here. But we're the supply chain. You know, we're kind of like the utilities provide the power and we provide the supply chain capability so that goods can get to markets or it can even be received from markets. Feedstock for manufacturing operations can come in through the state's port. So that's the half full side of it. The other side of that is it's a do or die project. It is a must happen project. And the reason why is, and I happen to have an office that sits at the base of the Crescent City Connection. And so I have a reminder every day as I look out my window that these vessels are passing under the Crescent City Connection. And sometimes I gasp a little because, you know, when the river's really high and the vessel's really big, the clearance is pretty tight. It's not a safety concern. I should say that right out front, that our pilots and everyone that is involved in navigation on the Mississippi River are highly, highly competent. There's not a dangerous situation here, but it's a really tight clearance. And as these ocean carriers continue to build larger and larger and larger container ships, and they will, they need to be able to come to port complexes that can handle them. And if we do not build this terminal down south, 17 miles south in Violet, there won't be the type of container activity that is going to be so critical. And it's such a part of the rich history of New Orleans and of Louisiana. The container ships simply will not be able to come under the bridge. And so they will go to Mobile, they will go to Houston, they will go to Savannah, they'll go elsewhere. So it's really an imperative for us to build this, but it's not an imperative just for the imperative state. It's also supportive of Louisiana and our businesses, and it's a regional driver of supply chain resilience as well. So it's a really important project, and we've really got to get this, get it done.
And, you know, it's really all about, I guess, in many respects, where we happen to find ourselves geographically, right, at the mouth of the Mississippi mm-hmm. River, close to the mouth of the Mississippi yep. River that feeds the entire interior of the United States and more, and yes, gets to a lot of different pieces of geography a lot easier.
It does. It absolutely does. And, you know, I've seen a lot of, I call them heat maps, but there's a great map graphic that before I even came on, I spent a little bit of time with Susan Bourgeois, Secretary Bourgeois, who's leading, of course, Louisiana Department of Economic Development. And by the way, I think that team is going to knock it out of the park. They are very, very focused on job creation and bringing business to the state. But she shared with me a heat map that showed precisely that. Through New Orleans, through the mouth of the Mississippi, where do you hit in the United States? And it is essentially everywhere in the United States. And that's really what's really critical about that is about 90% of global trade today moves in a container. Break bulk operations are still very, very critical. And at the same time, about 90% of global trade moves in a container. And when you think about where we're positioned and how we can reach, we can reach the East Coast, we can reach the West Coast, and we can reach, very, very importantly, the heartland of America from New Orleans and from our connectivity with the six national railroads. We call those Class One railroads. But they basically give us the reach into not just the United States, but also Mexico and also into Canada. So we're really strategically at really at a sweet spot, really at the hot spot of America in terms of being able to hit those markets, either bring goods from those markets out through our port and through our state or into markets throughout the United States as well. You're absolutely right on that.
We're visiting with Beth Branch, Port NOLA's new president and CEO of the New Orleans Public Belt Railroad. Beth, anytime that you have a development this size, no matter where you place it, obviously there are community concerns. And I've talked about that many times on this show.
Sure.
I always, though, kind of look at what goes on at the present time. And there's a container terminal that runs, I think it's as 6 miles of neighborhood that borders 6 miles of neighborhood along Uptown. Is that about right?
That's about right today. Yeah.
If my memory serves me correct, and I've had family that lives in those neighborhoods along that, and you wouldn't even know there's a container terminal there unless you go drive over there to go look at it.
Right. Well, and it's actually quite interesting, right? Port of New Orleans today is living very very well side by side of the neighborhood here, and I think that's a really it's the right word to use. It's a really special relationship where these entities can coexist, where neighborhoods and industry can coexist. And I think I was thinking this morning, actually, and prepping and thinking about our conversation today. I've spent a good bit of time in Southern California just by the nature of what I do. And that is a massive, massive, massive complex that is integrated into neighborhoods. So, we at the same time, what I do want to say in building a new greenfield project downriver, it is really important to the port, and we do have an obligation. I really believe that in my heart of hearts. We have an obligation to involve the community in discussions around what does this look like? What does this mean? How does this impact you? And not necessarily, again, I'm a half full person, not in negative ways, but how do we bring the positive things of a development like this into the community? How do we create generational wealth for residents there? How does this actually impact people? How does it help them? And then there's some more maybe minutia and more practical things. When we talk about engaging the community, we obviously are trying to do the right thing. We have an office over there that is staffed by a lovely woman who is there, who has office hours. We really encourage the community to come in, to learn, to talk to us. If they have concerns, we want to hear them. That's really important to us. One of the things that's happened in the community engagement process has also been around design, and there have been several iterations of design for the terminal, and we've taken in community input. We think that the road should be here instead of there, et cetera. So we're really trying to make sure that we get feedback and that we, not every time the answer is going to be yes, that's a possibility. Sometimes they're cross prohibitive. Sometimes they don't make operational sense, et cetera, et cetera. But where there's really good engagement and discussions, we really want that to happen so that we can make sure that what is built really benefits everyone and that we can coexist in a very, very harmonious environment there.
We've got to get to a break. We'll continue our conversation with Beth Branch, Port NOLA's new president and CEO of the New Orleans Public Belt Railroad. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Beth Branch, Port NOLA's new president and CEO, and the CEO of New Orleans Public Belt Railroad. Beth, I had many opportunities to talk to Brandi Christian about this. I know the public was somewhat skeptical about the commitment of the port, the state, and others. And as things started to come to fruition, a lot of folks, I think, had fewer objections. And that was the dedicated road. Is that still a priority for Port
Yes,
NOLA?
The St. Bernard Transportation Corridor.
Yes.
Oops,
so
no.
Talk to us about that for us about that for a moment.
Sure, absolutely. Well, it is a critical piece. I mean, it is being developed in parallel to the container terminal because those two things really go hand in hand. We've got to be able to connect the Louisiana International Terminal to the interstate system and deliver a road that's really been long sought after for St. Bernard Parish leaders and also the residents there. So we are actually quite committed to that. There are two projects that go hand in hand. One can't be done without the other. The other can't be done without the one. So we are prioritizing development of that as a parallel construction project. To date, just as a update on where we are with that, we have received both state and federal funding, significant amounts to support the development of that, including $15 million in federal funding toward the design of the project. Now, the Regional Planning Commission is taking the lead on what this all needs to look like and alternatives, et cetera, and existing traffic analysis. They've awarded a contract to a company called GIS Engineering, and they are studying the corridor and other roadway improvements that are going to support LIT. The good news is that feasibility study is progressing, and we expect to have the final report in April, and I understand that later on this month, we will actually start to get some previews of some of those recommendations. So super exciting that is really almost at the point where we can now kind of take it and start to talk about it in more, sort of real terms that people can kind of latch onto and understand. Part of this work is a company called WSP USA that we have hired. They're a global consulting firm, and they are assisting us with developing a public-private partnership strategy for the St. Bernard Transportation Corridor. Obviously, it's a fairly significant investment, and we want to look at potential financing structures, delivery mechanisms and methods, project governance, and, how do we engage stakeholders to make sure that we, are engaged, the community and these discussions, but also that we're expediting the overall development of this. So on track, moving forward, definitely a parallel project.
And Beth, it's safe to say that this type of corridor is not a case. This is not a case of first instance, right? I mean, you've seen this in other port terminals and port projects around the country and around the world.
And I'm sorry, I didn't understand the first thing you said. What?
This transportation corridor, this is not a case of first instance, right? I mean, you've seen these in other port facilities in the United States and around the world as well.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, I came directly from Mobile, and I can tell you that, there have been interstate interchanges and other, ramps and bridges that have come in to basically support. And, you want to everywhere that you are, have an industrial complex of this magnitude, you definitely want to make sure that you minimize impacts. You don't want to, you want to do grade separations. You want to do not at grade crossings. You want to do flyovers where you can do flyovers, et cetera, et cetera. And so all of those have really been evaluated. It's not a first instance type of project. It's really quite important to making supply chains flow, but also communities function function well.
I've had conversation with folks that have, been kind of skeptical and this and that. I said, you have to understand one thing. I said, a lot of this is selfishly motivated. because they want the ease of administration and to be able to move goods and services without any impediments. Everybody's on the same sheet of music. That doesn't always happen.
Absolutely. You need that efficiency and productivity. And, you know, the other thing is when you think about trucks.
I think we lost Beth, but we are run out of time. Beth Branch, thank you so much for joining us. Port NOLA's president and CEO of New Orleans Public Belt Railroad. Look forward to the next time that we are able to have a conversation, and best of luck to you. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Well, I don't know about you, but I really enjoyed that conversation. First time I get to talk to Beth Branch, and we wish her the best of luck in working through this lit process. They hope to begin to start construction in 2025. There are still some approvals that they're waiting upon from the Army Corps of Engineers. And we will talk more with Beth in the very near future about that as well. Coming up in the next hour, we will be talking with folks from Delgado. You're going to want to listen to this about all the opportunities that they provide. And in the back half of the 11 o'clock hour, we will visit with Louisiana's Attorney General Liz Murrell to talk about the investigation that she's embarked upon relative to the terrorist attack on Bourbon Street. We'll be right back. Stay with us.